Well, hello again, everyone in Turdville. Welcome to another exciting edition of the TFMR podcast. Today, I'm extremely excited to bring to you Alistair McLeod, who is has the official title of Head of Research at Gold Money. And many of you are familiar with Gold Money. They do fantastic work, and they are a great bullion selling and storage service. And I know many of you use them. Alistair does great work. He's done fantastic work as of late, has written several articles that have been linked not only here at TFMR, but all over the gold and silver blogosphere. The one I really wanted to address with him, though, today was the one he wrote this week and really got passed around as it should, called the Gold, and he entitled it Gold Futures Market Heading for Crisis. As you all know, I track the open interest every day, and we have been, I've been scratching my head and asking everybody for answers as to why the open interest, particularly in silver, has continued to rise all through 2012, when that was really the last thing we would have expected after MF Global. And we keep talking about this short position of JP Morgan in silver that just keeps growing and growing, and they really seem to be getting painted into a corner. The gold market's looking rather interesting too, and so Alistair wrote this piece. It is fantastic. I will link it again, as you see here in the text of this blog post, but I had an opportunity to visit with him and ask him to explain it himself. And so here he is. Alistair, thank you very much for coming into Turdville for a few minutes.
Ted, it's very much my pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, and again, thank you for all that you are doing. Let's start with the picture in gold. You had noticed, as all of we had, that the gold open interest really started to rise with after the price lows in August. And it peaked early in October with price peaking near 1800. But then it hung in there and really only just came down with this last, with the December contract expiration and this last COT report we saw it. But you've noticed some trends of U.S. bank, we'll call them U.S. cartel members versus the holdings of non-U.S. Tell us a little bit about what you found there.
Well, this is fascinating because you're right. If you look at the headline numbers for the commercials, you sort of think, well, there's nothing sort of really extraordinary going on. But then when you look at the bank participation report, you get a very different picture. Because if we can divide the before we start talking about U.S. banks and non-U.S. banks, if you just divide the commercials into banks and others, what's been happening actually is that the others have been reducing their net shorts while the banks have been increasing the net shorts. So what you don't see by looking at that straightforward, you know, sort of commercials and, you know, speculators and others and so on, you don't actually see that breakdown. But the important point is that underneath it all, these banks are getting deeper and deeper and deeper into short positions. And the thing that's remarkable, and I'm sure from your experience in the markets, you will bear me out on this, when a market is, let's say, sort of getting into bubble territory, if we take an extreme, you find it's very easy to shake out loose holders by marking things down. You know, if you're a market maker, you just bash the market and there are enough people there with profits to protect. You can shake them out. You can buy that stock back cheaply. Now, the same is true in the futures markets. And we found this when gold peaked, it was a bit over a year ago, when they did shake it out, they managed to close their positions big time.
Yes.
And they wound down their positions really from then until that August point that you mentioned. Now, this time round, we don't have all that loose stock to shake out. The market isn't overbought in that sense. It is probably a little bit oversold. You could even argue that it's really quite oversold. Now, those are not the conditions where you shake out loose stock. I mean, there will always be someone who's, right, you know, a bit overgeared, and you know, hedge funds are particularly guilty on this one because, you know, they will take out a gold position against something else. You know, Paulson did it. he took out a gold position against a long position in the U.S., you know, in U.S. bank equities.
Right.
And, you know, unfortunately, he got screwed on the U.S. bank equities at a time when gold was consolidating. So, you know, but hedge funds do that sort of thing. So there is always perhaps a little bit of that sort of stock around, but not enough to correct the imbalances that we see in these markets. It really is very, very striking. And I think that's the thing to bear in mind. The 2 points about the gold market here. One is that the banks' short positions have been increasing, and this has been concealed because the non-bank commercials, you know, swaps, producers, processors, manufacturers, and so on, the non-bank commercials have been reducing their short position. Mm-hmm. So that hides the increase in the bank's short position. And the other thing that was interesting was watching what happened. There is a divergence between the U.S. banks and the non-U.S. banks. The non-U.S. banks have reduced their shorts quite substantially. And it's almost as if they've sort of added their positions to the U.S. banks. Now, this tells me, or it suggests to me, that these banks are trying very, very hard. The U.S. banks are trying very, very hard to keep a lid on the price. Now, whether it's just them or whether it's the U.S. government in the background, central banks in the background, I mean, you know, we can speculate. But these figures are absolutely clear. They do show that the banks are as short as they've ever been.
And that there's been a rotation. You've also, this is the other thing that you've noticed, a rotation of, or a handoff of the non-U.S. banks giving up their side of that historic short position and having the U.S. banks have to pick it up.
Exactly.
Well, so, it certainly gives us a lot of firepower. I had noticed as well that if you go back to the price lows of mid-August, the total gross short position of the banks was under 300,000. And here we are just marginally higher, maybe $50 higher as we speak. And yet the total gross short position is up over 350,000. So it's really 20% higher. And that is certainly compelling, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's fascinating, and in a sense, you know, the central banks have always stood by in the past, prepared to, if you like, provide the liquidity in the market when the bullion banks get themselves into trouble. We've seen this with the London Gold Pool in the past when that operated. It's you know, it's obviously happened a few times in the past, though that's never really become full public knowledge. I would assume that in the gold market, if it was just down to the gold market, I would assume that that sort of steering from the central banks could get these banks out of their problem.
Yes,
but that is looking at it in isolation, and you know, really the danger in this, I think, comes from the silver market, which you know, I found even more fascinating.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because that has been a subject of great and lengthy discussion here at TF Metals Report. You know, if I'd have told you a year ago, right after MF Global and with all of the firms that for compliance reasons were telling their brokers and their clients that they could no longer trade there and everything else that was going on. Silver open interest was under 100,000 for a while a year ago, and right at 100,000 as we entered 2012. And now here we are at the end of 2012, and it peaked at 155,000 just a couple of weeks ago. If I had told you that would have probably you would have thought I'd been drinking all day, I would imagine, Alistair.
Well, I would have said, if you know, if I didn't know, I would have said, so what's the price? 50, 60?
Yeah, exactly. And instead here we are, just barely higher than we were a year ago, maybe $5-6 higher. Here's what's really gotten my interest, Alistair, and this is part of what you touch upon. In middle of September, or let's start with the middle of August, the silver open interest was about 115,000 when prices finally bottomed and started to rally. As we moved into the end of October, after the announcement of QE to infinity back in the middle of September, silver open interest continued to grow. Well, now in the time since, it's only continued to grow even more. In fact, the price of silver at the beginning of October was capped again at about $35.50. Since then, the price has come down a couple of dollars, obviously, to around 33. But yet the gross short position of the cartel banks has continued to rise, is actually higher than it was 2 months ago. So that, I know, is what got your attention. What do you think that, what is that telling us? What is about the silver market in general, but What do you think about the cartel actions and what it means for future price?
Well, I like you, I was fascinated to see this. I mean, I was actually a bit shocked when I put the chart together to see not only the U.S. banks net short at record levels, but also non-U.S. banks similarly short to a record degree. And you put these two shorts together, you're looking for 300 million ounces. It's a short 300 million ounces.
Wow.
Now, you know, when I sort of talk to people about supply and demand for silver, you're looking at, you know, you've got mine production, you've got recycling, and then you've got an industrial demand, and then if you're lucky, you've got 100 million ounces left over for investors or
right
or whatever else, or ETFs or whatever else you like to call it. We're talking here 3 years worth of investment supply, and they're short of it. This is absolutely extraordinary.
Right.
And, you talk about, the open interest in rising. The short positions have risen at a far faster rate. I mean, it has been absolutely staggering. So I look at this and I think, it's not so much the regulators. I think, where is the market? Why is it that NYMEX, COMEX allow this sort of thing to build up without tapping someone on the shoulder and saying, now, hold on a minute, don't you think this is getting a bit dangerous? I mean, you know, that is the job of someone running a market. You get the data in and you look at it and you make sure that no one in the market is going to cause you a systemic problem. Mm-hmm. I look at these charts, Turt, and I see a systemic problem in the making.
Yes.
And I find the whole thing unbelievable.
Well, here are the gross numbers. On the commitment of traders report as of October the 2nd, with price, like I said, between 35 and 35.50, the gross short position of the commercials was 93,628. As of last week, with the price under 33, the total gross position was almost 97,000. So it had continued to rise even while price was falling. So why are they, what is causing the banks to panic so hard that they have to continue to sell, do you think? And additionally, again, I guess, is that the physical market? Is that
No, that's right. No, it's you're right. It's that there's no stock. It's as simple as that. There is no stock. And when you haven't got any stock and you're short of 300 million ounces, you got a problem.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point. There is no stock. I mean, Eric Sprott goes in and he does an issue on one of his funds. He tries to buy 10 million ounces and he finds he's waiting and waiting and waiting for delivery. And presumably he gets on the phone and he screams and bawls at people. And eventually it gets delivered. And very often what he gets delivered is processed after he bought it.
Yes.
In other words, he's taking up all the new mine supply coming into the market, which doesn't go out to the solar panel manufacturers. I mean, this is an extraordinary situation. And, you know, I just wish, I don't know if you've got the ear of someone like Bart Shilton, but I think, you know, someone should actually say to him, look, this is getting very, very dangerous.
Well,
because, you know, I mean, you think MF Global was a problem. I think here what we're seeing, if this continues, inevitably, I think what is going to happen is that they're going to have to come to some sort of extraordinary arrangement in order to sort the mess out. And it'll probably do it on a price, you know, I mean, it'll probably do it when the price squeezes up through 50 bucks or something like that. But, that's no consolation for those of us that actually believe in orderly markets and fair play. It's not good. It really is not good.
Well, and as you mentioned, Alistair, that is what we're almost still expecting but not seeing. How the CME isn't aware of this, or all of this data is supplied by the CFTC, and so apparently in their 4 years of investigating, they can't bother themselves to look at their own data that they crank out, whether it's the bank participation report or the commitment of traders reports. The question then becomes, because we're in a equally dangerous, almost what we call it, you know, a signal failure situation last spring in 2011. I guess that's two springs ago now. That final spike, there's this conception or misperception that that was some type of bubble. But in fact, if you go back and look at the changes to the commitment of trades report in the month of April, it was the speculators were selling. What was driving price from 40 to 50 was a huge reduction, a panic almost, of the commercial short position, almost a short covering panic.
And it was, I agree.
It was then that we got the margin. That's when the CME came in and said, whoa, when they started raising, you know, they got the Sunday smash down and then all the margin hikes. Like you said, what will probably happen first, I would imagine, is some repeat of that where JP Morgan is sudden, or whoever that big short is, we all assume it's JP Morgan, but they are forced to start covering and prices starting to go parabolic. At that point, what do you think, based on your experience, would be the most likely way that this gets rectified and fixed?
I'm no securities, you know, U.S. securities lawyer. I'm not even a securities lawyer. I just have experience of sort of markets in different parts of the world. Yeah. All I can do is try and sort of point out things which I think might be common to all markets. When you get a situation like this, the first sign of it is the price starts rising very rapidly. The commentary that sort of comes.
Uh-oh, we've lost Alistair momentarily. Okay, picking up after a little service disruption. Alistair, you were talking about what happens with markets in your experience and how do they rectify this type of situation?
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, what happens in a situation like this is that people start getting wind of a nasty short position. And so you start getting buyers coming in to try and capitalize on that thing. And in this case, you probably see some hedge funds coming in and ramping the price up against the banks. Now, it gets to the stage where the market effectively has to suspend trading, if we just call it that, whether it's force majeure or whatever. They suspend trading to try and calm things down. And what they would probably do, I think, at that stage, and I don't know if they've got the capacity to do this within the rules, whether the rules matter or not, I don't know. Ask Nelson Hunt, he might have an opinion on that.
Yes.
I think that what's likely to happen is that they would cross off the long and short contracts at the pre-suspension price. That would be the logical thing to do. In other words, if the price ramps up to, say, $60 or something like that, and then they suspend it because the whole thing is getting, it's getting out of hand and people are sort of looking like they're going to go bust and, you know, the whole thing is going to melt down. So you suspend trading. If the price is $60, then everything crosses at $60. That is a sensible way to do it. I would suspect that if they tried to go back in terms of price to before that, I think there would be lots of litigation.
Yes.
And I think there would be litigation against the market. But again, I'm not an American lawyer. I don't have sufficient knowledge for my comment to be of any value, but just as a sort of thought process. So if it's suspended at $60, you know, I mean, the price, while it's been suspended after a week, may be 120 at that stage. Tough. You're only going to get 60 under the exchange rules. I think that's probably the way they would do it.
Well, I would suggest that perhaps we are in the early stages of that. And again, just getting back to the open interest numbers, in that the way this has always worked, you know, in time immemorial, is that price runs up. The banks short all the way up, and then they start a cascade down into which they cover the shorts and then start the whole process again. Price ran up back into October, and as I mentioned, the short position of the banks has continued to grow since, and that is because in the two-month decline from that kind of forced and capped peak in early October, the large speculator long position in silver has grown, not gone down, has grown from 47,000 to over 50,000. Exact opposite of everything we've seen in the past. You mentioned, you know, is there word? We all have heard about all the physical shortages. There's this growing understanding of the manipulation and the huge short in silver. maybe we're finally starting to see, you know, we get this anecdotal evidence of the pit locals and the smaller commercials and the hedge funds starting to sense weakness. Maybe that's what we're starting to see, this initial stages of what you just described.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if I had maybe experience of actually being on the floor of the market, I could answer that. But it doesn't quite feel like that to me yet. It feels to me more there's just a shortage of bullion. There's none around. I think it's that that's driving it. It's genuine demand. I tell you something interesting, which is it's sort of coming at it from a totally different direction. I have read over the last 2 days of surveys in Europe. In France, apparently gold is the fourth most desirable asset for an investor. Now, that surprised me in a sense, because that's very non-politically correct.
Yes.
In Germany, it is the third most popular. Now, I don't know that these guys, I don't think these guys have bought it yet, but I think that what they're saying is that as things deteriorate, they're going to buy it. And I think they probably have started. So, you know, we're seeing the demand for the physical. And really, what these banks are trying to do is they're trying to keep a lid on the price. The price is therefore too low. And because the price is too low, the physical is disappearing out even more rapidly. And I think that essentially, in a nutshell, is the trouble. I don't think yet, I mean, obviously there are no ultimate truths in this, but I don't think yet there's a sort of move on the floor of NYMEX or COMEX to, you know, sort of really embarrass the banks. I don't see that at all yet. I think it's just purely physical, Ted.
Well, we will certainly be keeping an eye on it. And in that end game that you described, where, and I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago, and several other commentators have, this idea that rather than the big shorts being on the hook for $100 or $200 in price, if there really truly is this physical shortage in it, and all of the leverage has to be unwound in the futures market, that we get this closing of the futures and just a closing of all these contracts at in your example was $60. Ultimately, that leaves us at the point where what we've all discussed, and that is the only way you are definitely going to participate once this is all known is through the holding of physical metal, because it is the physical that will continue to trade higher and be recognized at a higher amount of money.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And of course, the other thing which we must bear in mind is that if you get a disruption in the silver market, that is going to spill over into the gold market.
That's true too.
Now, if that happens, there is a risk, if you like, to the whole derivative structure. I mean, not only do we have gold and silver derivative ETFs in the market, and I'm not including GLD and SLV in that one. I mean, you know, that's a separate issue. But we do have, you know, ETFs which work off derivatives, doing a lot of investment management functions, if you like, once you get a major market like the silver market tripping up the gold market tripping up other markets, I mean, who knows how dangerous this would get? I mean, we were discussing earlier before we came on air that, you know, the Fed and the various other central banks are ready to print whatever amount of money it takes to stop the system falling over. And I'm sure that's true. And I'm sure that they'll print enough dollars, enough euros and so on to stop the derivatives markets collapsing. But my goodness, I wouldn't like to be in there for the ride while it happens. I wouldn't like to be long of a derivative. And I wouldn't like to be long of an ETF or a future that depends on derivative markets. It's dangerous. Physical is the only thing to have. At least you can sleep at night.
That's right. And in the end, whether we're talking about this ultimate disruption in silver and how that might spill over into gold and how the whole global economy may shake down and everything else that may come from that, physical metal is your only protection. So tell everybody how they get in touch with gold money and what gold money is if they don't know.
Well, gold money is quite simply a means of securely storing gold, silver, and platinum group metals outside the banking system. And that's the key thing.
Yes.
We have, you know, we have regular audits so that we do everything we can to give our customers confidence in what we do, and we have storage facilities around the world. We've just added Singapore. You've got Singapore, Hong Kong, Toronto in Canada, we've got London, and we've got Zurich. So you've got the option to pick where you want to put your gold, where you feel it's most safe. So that's what we do. It's goldmoney.com.
And it is a fabulous service that Turd gives a hearty tip of the hat and thumbs up to. Alistair, thank you very much for sharing some of your wisdom and experience here. I know everybody has really enjoyed listening to this. I can just tell. And hopefully we'll visit again soon. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Turd.